Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.
This is Sound and Vision on KEXP. I'm Emily Fox. KXP's production manager Jackson Long has published a booklet called Hiding in Plain Sight, Studios of Seattle and Tacoma. In it, he features 9 studios in the area that you'd likely miss if you drove by them. I caught up with Jackson recently to have him walk me through each of these studios and the stories behind them.
The first studio is called Audio Recording, Inc., and it was the first studio of Seattle engineer Carney Barton, who was an engineer in the 50s. Starting in the 50s, really through the 2000s in Seattle, and I think someone that we've actually featured on Sound and Vision
before. We have. I remember we did a feature on him, I think, in 2019 or 2020, and he seemed like such a character. I mean, he worked with so many Seattle artists, and he was like, yeah, he always had cats in the studio or something like that. Like, he was just like a really interesting dude.
A legendary oatmeal cookie recipe, which resonates with me.
But remind us who all he recorded with.
Anywhere from the Sonics to the Kingsmen to Dave Lewis. He was also like an excellent technical engineer. So he recorded orchestras, speeches, community groups. I think he even released a record of JFK's speech when he came to Seattle, stuff like that. So yeah, it was really all across the board.
Yeah, and so he ran, so this is Audio Recordings, Inc., and that was on Denny Way in Seattle. All right, so then next up is Wiley Sound Studios in Tacoma. Tell me more about this place.
Yeah, so this is like also following the Sonics thread. They recorded the album Boom there, which was next in their discography. And I was always fascinated, like, why did they end up recording this in Tacoma, and what's this Wiley Studios? The thing that blew my mind about this is my parents live in Tacoma. I finally found an address for this studio, and it turns out that it's 3 blocks from their house.
Oh, wow.
In basically a residential area, but you look at this building and you think, okay, this had to have been something at some point, and it was a studio. So it's now a duplex apartment building, so to speak. And the man that ran it was named Bill Wiley, and he died pretty tragically when he was a young man in 1973.
In a car crash, but he
basically, like, his bread and butter was country and western music, and he had 2 labels, one called Wasp and another one called Stacca, and recorded just some really great sounding country western music coming out of Tacoma, but then also recorded the Sonics and the Wailers as well. Hey little girl, what's the matter with you? Don't you like the things I do? You're wearing a frown. I've been shot. The next on the list is London Bridge Studios, and this is, gosh, so many artists have recorded here, and what I find interesting is it's not located in Seattle, it's in Mount Lake Terrace, which is like a forgotten north suburb of Seattle. So tell us more about London Bridge Studios. Exactly. I mean, London Bridge has been around. It's still a great, vibrant studio. There's 3 producers there, Jeff Ott, Jonathan Plum, and Eric Lillivas, who operate it now. And it's been in operation since the mid-80s. And I think probably most famously were Pearl Jam 10 and Temple of the Dog recorded, Alice in Chains, Soundgarden, and as well as more national acts that sort of came to Seattle to try to get that sound after those albums blew up in the early 90s. And what I found interesting through this is I was looking at the names of the brothers who started the studio in 1985, Rick and Raj Parashar. And I was looking at that last name. I was like, wow, I don't feel like, and I looked a little more into them. So they're Indian American brothers. And then Rick went on to, I mean, he produced for Pearl Jam and Alice in Chains, but they also went on to work with like Three Doors Down and Nickelback. And I think won some Grammy Awards, and they were based in Seattle. But also what I find interesting about their stories, I feel like you don't hear a lot of Indian Americans in the rock realm and being recognized for their work. Rick passed away, I think, in 2014 from natural causes. But I thought that their story, gosh, I want to dig more into their story after reading this little blurb about them.
I do as well. I wonder how they came to sort of, you know, open the space and really become really the go-to place where Seattle bands would go when they're really ready to step up and do sort of a major label type big sounding record.
Okay, so then this next one, it's kind of a two-in-one space, kind of in Ballard, or is it Freelard? Freelard?
Yeah, yep, Freelard, exactly.
So tell me about Triangle, Reciprocal, John and Stu's, the Hall of Justice. Like so many different names.
Yeah, this got the double truck, the big center spread in the book, and that's because, I mean, really my fascination with studios started with discovering the studio when I was 16 and visiting friends in Seattle. They lived a couple blocks from this place, and they said, "Hey, do you know that Pearl Jam recorded in a building down the street?" And I was sort of like, "Oh, okay, yeah, they're trying to entertain me." You know, I wasn't sure I believed them. So they walked me down to this building, and it was just falling apart. No windows, the paint was peeling, and it was like, hmm. And of course, this is pre-internet, so being able to research these things was limited. But yeah, over time, I discovered that, yeah, it was a studio. It was still in operation. And this is really, I would say, the soul of Seattle's recording scene. The building itself was built in 1914. And then in 76, it became a studio called Triangle Studios. And then I would say sort of most famously became Reciprocal Recording in the 80s. And it was where Nirvana Bleach was recorded, also where Pearl Jam cut their first demos before they were actually Pearl Jam. Slater Kinney recorded there, Harvey Danger. And then at some point around 2000, Chris Walla from Death Cab for Cutie and Barsook Records bought the space, and it became the Hall of Justice. And since then, it's enjoyed a really long run. And actually, the building has been remodeled in the last 10 years. So now no longer looks as run down as it once did. And it's a great functional studio that Chris Walla still runs. And there's just a lot of history there.
And it's interesting because now I'm looking at it at a map. So I used to kind of live in this neighborhood, and I have driven by many, many times and never noticed it. It's right by the Fred Meyer in Ballard. And yeah, now I'm looking at a photo of it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I've driven by this so many times and have never noticed it.
yeah. And it, you know, it's amazing. Probably one of the funnest moments in this project was digging through those old photos at the State Archive and coming across this crisp photo of this building when it was Triangle Drugs and Groceries in 1937. And, you know, it had all this great signage and windows in the front, and you could tell it was just sort of a neighborhood hub in a previous life.
Okay, so this next one is Egg Studios, which I hear got its name from egg crates being on the walls for audio sonics treatment or buffering.
It's the classic studio. Yeah, let's just throw some egg cartons on the wall. Yes, the studio is no longer there. The house is there. So the man behind this studio was Conrad Uno. And he recorded so many records: Presidents of the United States, Fastbacks, Flop, Young Fresh Fellows, Mudhoney, the Posies. If you're going through Seattle records from the 80s and 90s, the name Egg comes up all the time. And it was just a studio he had in his basement. And he kept doing it through, I think, about 2017 and continued to be mostly analog based and always an affordable place to record.
All right, so the next one is a vast classic in Seattle in kind of the Green Lake neighborhood. Tell me more about Avast.
Avast is still around. It's now in another location, which will be in volume 2 of the book coming out sometime.
Oh, okay.
And Avast is, Stuart Hollerman is the man behind Avast, and he's just one of these guys that's behind all things recording in Seattle. This studio was just, again, kind of a humble space. It used to be a mechanic's garage, and it got converted into a studio and was just sort of a workhorse of the music scene for a long time.
And looks like it's produced records by Soundgarden, Built to Spill, Slater Kinney, Death Cab for Cutie, The Shins, Band of Horses, and many others. So then the next one is Studio Litho. Tell me more about this space.
Studio Litho. So this really sort of fits the theme. This studio is in the heart of Fremont, Seattle neighborhood. And you look at the building and it's brick and concrete blocks. And the front says professional engravers and sort of faded paint. And you think, okay, is that really a store? What's up with that? So that's actually Studio Litho. And that is a studio owned by Stone Gossard of Pearl Jam and Brad, Painted Shield. And again, it's just one of these studios that has been around producing records. I can't even count the number of records that have been done there. But yeah, it's just it's a great space. One of the cool details, again, about this one is that it's been around since 1929, and it used to be a grocery type thing called Fremont Malt Shop. So again, it's had all these different past lives.
And again, I used to live in Fremont and have driven by this so many times, and it's by Brower's Cafe, which I absolutely love and revel, and I have never noticed it.
Yeah, maybe Rudy's Barbershop right there as well.
Exactly. Yes. Okay, so then second to last that's in this book is Soundhouse in North Ballard. Tell me about Soundhouse.
Soundhouse, yeah. This is, again, you'd miss it if you didn't know what you were looking at, but this is right along 15th, and it's sort of in the back lot behind a house. And unlike other studios in the collection, this was actually built to be a studio. So it's a bit more functional than some of the others. And this one is the current home of Jack Endino, who's a legendary Seattle producer for Nirvana and others. And this is just one, I would say it's been a favorite of mine and other engineers in Seattle. It's a great studio if you're a freelancer. So you rent out the studio for a few days and use it to capture some basic tracks. And it's just been used many, many times by many people. Some of the folks that have done records here, the Posies, Car Seat Headrests, Long Winters, Blacktones, Gashuffer, Sonics. Yeah, that's kind of the scoop on Soundhouse.
I feel like the Sonics make an appearance a lot in this book.
They do. That's the thread. I love making these like little connections.
All right, so finally, Uptone Records in Tacoma. Tell me about this one.
Yeah, I love this one as well. So it's just this kind of strange cinder block building that overlooks the port of Tacoma. And this one has always caught my eye because there's a big red sign out front that says Upton Electric. And I thought, okay, so what's up with that? Is the studio name connected to that? What's the deal? So it turns out that this place was an appliance store run by this character named Ralph Upton, and he sold sort of used appliances. And at some point that business went out and a couple guys named Clint Werner and Wes Warish. Hopefully I'm saying his name correctly, started this studio, and they decided to put a spin on that name, and they called it Uptone. And it's been a studio basically since the mid-90s, and then recently it got taken over by an engineer named Hunter Lee. And he's got just a great collection of gear. It's sort of analog focused, and one of the cool items he has is a collection of Hal Blaine's drums and percussion. Hal Blaine was the drummer for the Wrecking Crew, so like if you want to go and use the bells that were used on Good Vibrations, you can do that.
I'm picking up Good Vibrations. She's giving me the excitations.
This is called Hiding in Plain Sight, Studios of Seattle and Tacoma, a little booklet with kind of images of different studios that you probably wouldn't notice around Seattle and Tacoma. It was created by KEXP's own Jackson Long. I'm curious, Jackson, when you were making this, what kind of insights did this give you about Seattle music history that you didn't know before?
I think one thing was just I was surprised at how many of these places had been neighborhood groceries,
yeah,
or pharmacies. And it sort of, I think maybe the takeaway is like, it's hard to find a place where you can be loud in the city.
Yeah.
And so you end up finding these kind of oddball places where you can be loud, but also the loud doesn't come into your recording. So it's sort of like a very small niche of buildings that can exist as a proper studio.
Yeah. Well, again, it's called Hiding in Plain Sight, Studios of Seattle and Tacoma. Jackson, thank you so much for sharing this history with us.
Thank you for the opportunity, Emily. It's been fun.
That was Sound and Vision. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast, and consider giving a one-time $20 donation to help support this show at kexp.org/sound. Thanks for listening.